It is time for our prayer for illumination. Open our ears that we might hear the voice of truth in your world today. The first reading today is from Joel, the second chapter, verses 23 through 32. O children of Zion, be glad and rejoice in the Lord your God, for he has given the early rain for your vindication. He has poured down for you abundant rain, the early and the later rain, as before. The threshing floors shall be full of grain. The vats shall overflow with wine and oil. I will repay you for the years that the swarming locust has eaten, the hopper, the destroyer, and the cutter, my great army which I sent against you. You shall eat in plenty and be satisfied, and praise the name of the Lord your God, who has dealt wondrously with you. And my people shall never again be put to shame. You shall know that I am in the midst of Israel, and that I, the Lord, am your God, and there is no other. And my people shall never again be put to shame. Then afterward, I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. Even on the male and female slaves in those days, I will pour out my spirit. I will show portents in the heavens and on the earth, blood and fire and columns of smoke. The sun shall be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the great and terrible day of the Lord comes. Then everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem there shall be those who escape, as the Lord has said. And among the survivors shall be those whom the Lord calls. Our hymn is 339 in the big blue, Be Thou My Vision.
Just a note about that hymn, the story behind it is that Saint Patrick was asked by the King of Ireland to not light any candles. In fact, the whole country was not to light any candles until the winter solstice was over. And St. Patrick went ahead and lit candles to Christ, putting his love for Christ and devotion to Christ and to God ahead of the king. So that is one of the stories behind that hymn I thought was very interesting. Our second reading today is from the book of Luke, chapter 18, verses 9 through 14. He also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying thus, "God, I thank you that I am not like other people. Thieves, rogues, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of all my income." But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even look up to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, but all who humble themselves will be exalted. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. This is a familiar parable, as many of Jesus' parables are, and I think it brings to mind a lot of things about where we are as a country today. I think there are those of us who like to exalt themselves, and, you know, to a certain extent, in order to hold an office or be a professional, do a lot of things, you have to have a pretty strong ego in order to do that, right? But that's really not the theme here. It's okay to have a strong ego. What's not okay is claiming all of the good things that have happened to you and all of the justification that you feel that you have earned to yourself. The parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. The Pharisee is a righteous man who tithes and prays and goes to synagogue just like he's supposed to do. And he's well respected in his community for his righteousness. And that might be a clue to us to look for, that he sees himself as well respected in his community and probably likes that. He even stands up tall and lifts his arms high above his head when he prays. "Oh Lord, I'm so glad that I'm not like those other people." This man just knows that God has favored him, and he isn't going to let anyone forget it. And he even thanks God that he is not a sinner. On the other hand, we have the tax collector, considered to be one of the lowliest members of society at the time. By all accounts, tax collectors were Jewish, but worked for the Roman government, the hated, powerful Roman government. They were seen as traitors. And not only that, but they skimmed off the top of what they collected. They collected the amount that the Romans asked, and then they were allowed and even encouraged, I think, by the Romans to take whatever else they could get for their own gain. You just couldn't trust a tax collector and consider them eligible for God's mercy? Forget it. Now, those hearing this story from the mouth of Jesus, and who read it as well, might think we know where this story is going. And yet, when Jesus starts telling a story like this, be prepared to have your expectations turned upside down, right? because we see this happen time and time again in the parables, and this one is no exception. At the end of this parable, instead of the Pharisee being the one that Jesus says God favors and forgives, it's the tax collector who's called righteous before God. What? The tax collector righteous before God? What is Jesus thinking? How could he be so mistaken? Now, most of us here have heard this parable enough times that when we get to the end, the outcome isn't that surprising anymore. We know that in this story, the tax collector wins and the Pharisee loses, right? And we like winners and good guys, and we hate losers and bad guys in our society, so we're eager to pick out who's up and who's down, who's right and who's wrong. And of course, we want to be on the side of whoever it is that wins, even if it's actually the most despicable person in town. And on the surface, that is what this story is about. Who is the truly righteous person? Jesus even says so. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. And if Jesus says it, it must be true, right? Only in is this bad versus good, right versus wrong mentality what Jesus really meant by that saying? Was Jesus really saying exaltation equals bad, humble equals good? Evil Pharisee versus the tax collector with the heart of gold? Or is this just our way of making sense of a saying that's so hard for us to hear? All who exalt themselves will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. And just where do we fit into that scenario? So let me ask you this. Who do you identify with in this story? Think about it for a minute, because for any given story or parable, we all tend to identify with one of the characters. So, do you identify with the Pharisee or with the tax collector? Or are you the silent observer watching these two men pray in the temple from the back of the room? Now you may begin to see the problem. If you identify with the tax collector, then you have to admit that you're identifying with someone who was part of the dregs of society at the time. Not a nice thought. But if you identify with a Pharisee, then you end up being found unrighteous by God. Another bad choice, it seems to me. Put it in a modern context. Suppose instead of a Pharisee, it's someone you really admire for their teaching in the church. A well-known church leader such as Rick Warren or Joyce Meyer, for example, who is thanking God that he or she is not like other people. We've actually seen this with televangelists who have prided themselves on their relationship with Christ only to turn up having had an affair or some other failing, what we see as a failing. But suppose instead of the tax collector, it was a homeless person or a drug addict or perhaps someone who was mentally ill or someone in jail for committing a gruesome murder who is praying with downcast eyes and begging God for forgiveness. How easy or difficult is it then to guess who will be justified before God? How much harder is it to believe that the Rick Warrens and the Joyce Meyers of the world might not receive God's grace, while a low-down, no-good, rotten-to-the-core person described above would? Part of the problem with this passage for many of us is that we don't know what to do about sin. We don't know what to do with the idea of sin. We know what sin is. We think we can easily identify it, and yet we just don't know what to do about it. And so we end up drawing lines in the sand. We end up looking for ways to separate the wheat from the chaff, the sheep from the goats, because that's what the Bible says to do, right? to establish for ourselves a criteria by which we can know what it takes to receive the loving kindness of God, known as chesed. I think I've used this word before. It's a Hebrew word that roughly means loving kindness, a sense of mercy and forgiveness and compassion and love and goodness and grace, all rolled into one. It's what God has to offer us, and incidentally, what God asks of us on behalf of others. And we humans work hard at setting up rules and goals and behavioral standards that will help establish us as righteous. And I know that some of you are thinking, well, Sharon, we have to have rules, don't we? And it's true, we do need rules. But the problem is, as soon as we start making rules for people to live by and then start using the following of these rules or the not following of these rules as criteria for receiving the chesed of God, the grace of God, as soon as we start finding righteousness in following the rules, then it becomes all too easy to start using not following the rules or rituals as a way of excluding others. Then we see ourselves and not God as the arbiters of who are the sheep and who are the goats and so forth. And this is what happened to the Pharisee. He was so confident of his proficiency in following the law. He was so confident in his own ability to earn righteousness that he forgot that God is the one who makes that determination. He forgot that it is God who determines righteousness. God offers chesed to the ones that God chooses. This is the exaltation that Jesus is scorning, a self-exaltation that takes a starring role in its own justification and relegates God to a supporting role at best. The tax collector, on the other hand, realizes his own unworthiness to even approach God. Remember, he doesn't even look up to heaven, but he looks down and beats his breast. And he knows that he's totally dependent on God for his salvation. He pleads for mercy and not applause. Think about that for a minute. God, I thank you that I am not like these other people. Aren't you so happy with me? God, forgive me, for I am a sinner. Mercy, not applause. In The Story of a Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, we come to a point in the story in which Scrooge, like the Pharisee in this parable, is confronted by his own self-righteousness. Scrooge, having made remarks at the beginning of the story about the needy of London being the surplus population and implying that they have less right to live than those who aren't needy, finds himself with the ghost of Christmas present looking in on the Cratchit family. Bob Cratchit is his clerk, and Scrooge barely pays him enough to support his family. And when Scrooge finds out that Tiny Tim may die and begs mercy for the boy, the ghost of Christmas present comes back with Scrooge's own words. If he is to die, then let him do so and decrease the surplus population. When Scrooge is offended by this, you use my own words against me, eh? Christmas present reproaches him by saying the next time he speaks in such a way, he might remember who and where the surplus population is. And then he goes on to warn Scrooge that maybe he is less worthy than Bob Cratchit's child. It is a pivotal moment for Scrooge, a moment when he is faced with the futility of making judgments about the worthiness of others to receive. And as we know from the story, Scrooge makes a complete turnaround after that and goes on to become a good man, as good a man as the good old city has ever seen. It is brought forcefully home to Scrooge that nothing he does in this life can save him. when he literally sees his own cold and lonely death happen and his self-righteousness disappears, we assume forever. And this is what Jesus is asking, really, that we too let our own self-righteousness, our own self-reliance go and become dependent on God's love for us to see us through. Again, this is very hard for us modern to postmodern Americans who believe that we just have to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps in order to make things better for ourselves. This is very hard for a people who have been raised to believe that independence and self-reliance is a godly attribute, that individual achievement trumps all. And it may seem unfair that this Pharisee, who is probably a pretty good guy if he's following all of the laws, who gives faithfully to his church and prays regularly, who is seemingly virtuous, and who probably takes care of himself and his family without cheating anyone, that he is on the outside of our story. But it's all in the heart. It's all in the need for and the recognition of God's chesed in our lives. It makes the difference. Amen.